This is the Best Boys Podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya. Hello, Monica.
I have a pitch for our 100th episode.
What is it?
We do it. We find a tattoo parlor that will allow us to enter with microphones and get Ornor tattooed on our bodies while we talk about, like, the best film of the year.
I think we should hide 100 tiny pictures of Nicole Kidman around Los Angeles.
Oh, that I agree with that. I think it's a joint effort.
So we're okay. We're aligning on the activation.
Yeah.
Okay. Incredible.
You're welcome.
Hi, Monica. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jessica?
I'm fine.
We just got stuffed full of za.
Yeah.
From Triple Beam Pizza.
Triple Beam at Highland Park. Echo Park. There's an Echo Park location.
Yeah.
If you're an LA local.
Yeah. It's really good.
It's bomb.
You know what? I really want magpies now. You said Highland Park.
Well, you're going to have to make Aaron order it for us.
I will. It's unfortunate, but it's going to happen. You know, there's this. So I don't know if you guys know Magpies. It is a soft serve place. Uh-huh. I love them because they have like dairy free options, as you all know.
Yeah, most of their options are dairy free.
Pretty much almost all of them.
Yeah, I think they do all but two flavors.
And for me, it's always just better for me to eat things that don't have dairy in them because I'm allergic to dairy.
Yeah, because your stomach says no.
But my mind and my heart says yes.
Yes.
But Magpies is the shit, and they have specifically this like candied honeycomb that you can put on top of your soft serve.
Yeah.
And it's literally the shit.
Like, I'm a fan of the chocolate cookie crumbs.
So good.
And also the butterscotch Rice Krispies.
Oh my God, those are so good. You're 100% correct.
Oh no.
They have like a chocolate malt flavor that I'm like, I'm not like a chocolate ice cream person,
no,
which
but
is
their
really
flavor
funny.
Is really good.
But their fucking chocolate malt soft serve hits every time.
Also, it sounds weird, but that sweet corn almond. It's
so
fucking
good.
Incredible.
So good. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Their new flavors popping.
Popping.
But that's Magpies. And we had pizza, not Magpies. But no. I'm going to get Magpies.
We will get Magpies.
One way or another.
One way or another.
Exactly.
I'm going to get the Magpies.
It's Oscars season.
Yes.
So
it's Oscars season.
We are
on the bus. I need a gold boy. Give me a gold boy. I need a gold boy. I just made that up on the spot, if you can believe it.
I want to no longer be associated with you. It's Oscar Mayer wiener season.
Yeah.
No weenie whistle.
No weenie whistle.
And you know, it's about around this time of year that we either get really happy, really upset, or really angry.
Yeah. There are only a few options in terms of emotion. So far, I'm going to say that we're on the happy end.
We're on the happy
side.
Spectrum. We're on the happy side for sure.
Some good shit ended up coming out this year after a year of piss poor films.
I'm not going to lie. The prior year, horrible.
Awful.
What was that? Like
even the beginning of this year, though, not good.
Not good.
We were like, okay, everything everywhere all at once. But besides that, it's kind of shit, guys.
Exactly. And then it ramped the fuck up.
And then the Academy said, we're going to make it rain. And that they did.
They did. And now A24 is that bitch. And now A24 is like, I am that hoe. Why men great till they gotta be great?
And we'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now back to the show.
I truly am feeling a lot of joy about talking about these films.
Yeah.
And today we're going to be doing like a duo type situation.
Yes, we're talking about two movies because we were not able to record last week because
and
of Aaron.
We also just want to make Yes, honestly, because Ant-Man came out. So
and Aaron, for some reason, has pledged allegiance to the Disney Corp.
Yeah, to the Michael Mouse of it all. The House of Mouse. So we are now doing two movies in one, but next week we'll be back with one.
Just one movie. Yeah, but today we're talking about two that are, in our opinion, bomb. Bomb as fuck.
Literally so good.
So bomb.
I'm honestly so happy with this.
Yeah, you can probably predict one of the ones we're talking about this month because we mentioned it several times in other episodes after
several
we
times.
Saw it.
Yeah. So really quick rundown. No, we're not doing all of the best. So first things first, I'm the realist. I really do believe that there are only a few Best Picture films worth talking about.
I agree.
And Jessica agrees. And so we decided to pick the ones that we thought were like top, top tier.
Top.
Like
top tier.
Cream of the crop. Like fuck the rest
there
of them.
There were a couple that we like think are probably amazing. Like All Quiet on the Western Front is I've heard it's incredible.
Probably
and
amazing.
I plan to watch it before the Oscars, but I don't want to talk about another war movie.
I'm over it.
We gave you Platoon. We're done.
We're done.
Did we do Save It Private Ryan? No, we didn't.
We
didn't.
Here's the thing, you guys. If you like war movies, go watch war movies. We don't like them.
No.
For a myriad of reasons. It's like, personally for me, I can't get into it. In the same way that like we're not going to be talking about like car movies.
No.
You know what I mean? Like Fast and the Furious who? Vin Diesel where?
I mean, it helps that those are just bad movies. But
I mean,
still.
I do like the one where they go to Tokyo.
We're going to Tokyo Drift.
That one.
We can't have this podcast anymore.
When they drift in Tokyo, that's the good one. And I like the first one.
Fast and Furious.
We get introduced to Vin.
Well, we know him
Vincent
already.
Diesel.
Vincent Diesel.
Vincent Dieselton.
That's not even his real name.
What is his real name again?
Let's find out. It's something stupid.
It's Vin Diesel.
It's Mark Sinclair.
It's
The only thing I like Vin Diesel for is his romance with Helen Mirren.
Oh my God, yes.
Because it's undeniable.
It's literally insane. What is their like ship name? Viren? Velen?
Know. Would she go by Helen Diesel or Helen Sinclair?
Helen Diesel? Why do I want her in like a little like flames cat suit?
That's exactly what I want.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's like waving one of those racer flags.
Yeah.
Can you tell I know
Helen,
nothing about
race? Do you need
car?
Assistance wedding planning?
Blink
We're
twice.
Here.
Blink twice.
I'll take the noble job of shining Vin's head.
Oh my God.
The ceremony.
Why? How does he get it so shiny?
I mean,
you need to shave that close. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Bro, that's just fucking skill.
That's skill.
He's born with it.
He probably gets like his head steamed every
Maybe
day.
Maybe he's born with it.
Maybe it's Botox.
It's lip gloss.
Maybe it's Botox.
That wouldn't make it shiny.
Oh, I guess you're right, huh?
He probably just gets it buffed.
I hear that people get Botox like under their armpits.
Yeah, to stop sweating
so
much.
Yeah. But then I'm like, what does it do? Because isn't Botox like the thing that paralyzes your muscles?
Yeah.
So
I don't know how it works.
I don't know how that works.
Maybe it paralyzes the sweat gland.
For what purpose, though?
To make it stop making sweat.
I don't
know.
Okay. We're veering off the unbeaten
path. We're Tokyo
path.
Drifting off topic.
Stop it right now. All this to say, we chose the cream of the crop. Literally, shut the fuck up. Shut up. We chose cream of the crop. Uh-huh. We're very excited to talk about them.
Yeah.
The first movie is, Jessica?
The first movie is Ta.
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 Okay, Tar came out in 2022, written and directed by Todd Field. Motherfucking Todd Field, writer, director
Little Children.
Of Little Children. You know how much we love that movie.
That was a really good movie. Okay.
This synopsis is insane, but I'm going to roll with it because it's as insane as the movie. Having achieved an enviable career few could even dream of, renowned conductor / composer Lydia Tarr, played by Kate Blanchett, the first female principal music director of the Berlin Philharmonic, is at the top of her game. As a conductor, Lydia not only orchestrates, she manipulates. As a trailblazer, the passionate virtuoso leads the way in the male-dominated classical music industry. Moreover, Lydia prepares for the release of her memoir while juggling work and family. She is also willing to take up one of her most significant challenges, a live recording of Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 5. However, forces that even the imperious maestro can't control slowly chip away at Lydia's elaborate facade, revealing the genius's dirty secrets and the insidious, corrosive nature of power. What if life knocks Lydia off her pedestal?
You're welcome. Why is that the most unhinged synopsis I've ever read?
Because Tar is a little bit of an unhinged movie, but like it's so sneaky about it.
It's very unhinged. So brief backstory.
Yes.
Jessica and I went to go see this movie together. Yes, we were very adamant about going to go see it in a movie theater because we were very, this is like the one movie we were very, very excited about.
Yeah. Todd Field has not made a film in 15 years, guys.
A very long time. When did Little Children come out? 2006?
2006, 2005, 2006, something like that.
0506. So imagine my surprise when I see Tar. And the thing is like to be quite frank, I had not seen a trailer for this movie.
No.
I'd only seen
the billboard.
These enormous, like we're talking like 50 fucking feet
huge
high.
Fucking billboards.
Like side of buildings billboards or posters or whatever. And like on every AMC it was like Tar.
And it's just Kate Blanchett in black with her head thrown back and her arms out and a baton.
Holding one of those conductor batons.
In the throes of conducting.
Like passion. And I'm like, oh shit, I have to watch this movie.
Yeah.
Like if Kate looks that good, I need to watch this movie.
Oh, of course.
So like I literally based it off of nothing other than these fucking posters.
Yeah. I mean, same.
They were all over Los Angeles. Every single AMC that was around town had these enormous posters. They had them at the fucking Century City Mall and like the sides of buildings. They had them on the side of the fucking freeway. You could see them. They were everywhere. The fucking marketing for this movie was so
in
your face.
It came out of nowhere.
But also very like elusive and enigmatic.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wait,
just
what?
Just like Ta.
So right off the bat, it sucks you in with the mystery.
Sucks you in.
Of it all.
You get the like this long fucking ass title sequence starts the movie with this weird chanting music behind it. It's like a weird like I don't even know.
I don't know.
It's just kind of like the whole time.
It's for
literally 6 minutes.
It's a lot. It is an alarmingly long amount of time. But like, frankly, it's necessary. You need to be in this specific mood to watch this movie. So like right off the bat, Todd's like, yo, I know that you need to be like eased into this movie because otherwise you're not going to be on this ride with me.
Correct.
And 100% for like 6 minutes, you just get this like random chanting.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I'm not going to lie to you. This movie, and I wrote this down in my notes, and I've talked about this with Monica before. This movie is like a very, 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 it's the perfect example of how some films create a barrier of entry to being a film fan.
Yep.
And I don't mean like a film fan, like you see all the Marvel movies. I mean like you're going for the award films, you know, or the more like art house films, etc. The ones from like more esteemed filmmakers. And I'm not saying that like they're better. This is just kind of like, that's the niche that this movie is in.
Yeah. This is like in that, like if you like art house films, if you like
correct,
deeper films.
Exactly.
It's really for that group of people. Although like, I honestly think that anyone would watch this and have an opinion on it. I do think, I don't think that it's like one of those nothing movies where like some people watch it and they go, what was that?
I think, but the thing is, though, I think plenty of people will, because I think this movie has an inherent like elitism to it.
It does.
That
it feels very snobby.
Makes it impossible for someone to, for some people to enjoy or even like attempt to understand what it's about. Like they're going to be like, okay, well, nothing is happening.
And that's like, true.
No, there's a lot. I think there's a lot happening.
What I'm saying is that's true. On the surface, there's really nothing happening. It's really about like going on the ride with a director and seeing where it goes and going, actually, there's a, in this movie particularly, there's a fuck ton happening underneath the surface. I do think that like, I do think that this movie can be made accessible in a lot of ways. I think that the premise of this movie is really gorgeous. I think like following a really problematic like female composer that's like on this big world stage is such a brilliant like topic for a movie, a miniseries, whatever. Like if they had come out with a Tar like miniseries and made it more accessible that way, I think like that 100% could have worked. This feels like a drop in the Tar universe bucket.
Yeah.
Like the introduction, if you will.
Yeah. Well, they, and didn't they, there was an article about how like this is a whole universe.
Like they're basing something around the character of Lydia Tar, which like gold. That's, that is fucking gold. I think it's such a strong, strong enough character to like carry through other mediums, you know?
She's very fascinating, deeply thought provoking, like incites a lot of different emotions in you, like anger, confusion. You're impressed by her, but you also fucking hate her at times. Like she's incredibly, incredibly complex. And like Todd Field doesn't just write or direct anything, you know, this is the first thing he's done in 15 years, like we said. So we kind of knew that it would be incredible, or it had to be incredible.
Well, yeah.
And then it ended up being confusing, first off.
So confusing.
Not like the content of the movie, but the feeling we had after it.
This is where it goes into what you were saying earlier, because I don't want what you were saying to be misconstrued.
Right.
It's about like, Jessica and I went into it with an incredibly open mind and still came out being like, what? And it took us a long time, i.e. like the 20 minutes after the movie was over,
for us
to like really fully grasp and understand A, the message of the movie, and B, what the movie was trying to do and how it was paced. Because it was also paced so insanely.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an insane fucking...
It bounces like, around.
It's very disjointed, but in a very good way.
Yeah, it's linear. It just, like, very abruptly goes from one place to another.
It shifts tone a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And I think you just, again, you just have to be along for the ride and, like... Honestly, I think that this is a movie that could be watched multiple times and you always get something out of it. And I think that's the mark of a truly good film. And frankly, just a good piece of art is when you can consume the art multiple times and you're always receiving something different from it.
Yeah.
You're not always leaving with the same feeling. You're leaving with a different feeling, with a different take, with a different message that wasn't necessarily there the first time.
Exactly.
Or the second time or the third time. And I do think that with a movie like Tar, it has the capacity to like, evoke that passion in people that Lydia Tar has and in a lot of ways get you to think about and reflect like on your own life and where passion exists in your own life.
Yeah.
Aside from all of the terribly niche messaging in this movie.
Sure, sure. The niche messaging about like the world of music and the politics, et cetera, et cetera.
All of the things.
Yeah. And also, I think that Kate Blanchett, because she is so famous.
Oh my God.
But also so respected, she's a really easy person to kind of like hitch your, you know. Hitch your wagon to and trust her. Like, you might not understand every word coming out of her mouth because Lord knows we did not.
Oh my God.
There were so many times where you're like, what the fuck is happening in this
scene? We literally would turn to each other and go, what?
Who is that?
What did she say?
It takes a couple watches to like figure it out. But if you trust her and let like it, this sounds so fucking corny, but if you let her emotion and her performance lead you, you really will be rewarded. I promise you, because like Cate Blanchett is in such a refined era of her career.
Yes.
She is incredibly calculated, but also comes across as deeply natural. This performance was so demanding. She had to learn how to speak German. She had to learn how to conduct an orchestra. All of the conducting that you see is real. All the music, all the orchestral music,
everything
was recorded in real life.
Yep. They have the soundtrack available for you to listen to, and like it is beautiful. And like there are not a lot, you know, frankly, like, I don't know too many people that are into classical music. And like, I'm personally not very into classical music.
Yeah.
But when you look at it through the lens of like this film, mm-hmm. almost like how when The Queen's Gambit came out and everyone got really fucking into chess.
Yes.
Even though, but prior to that TV series, mm-hmm. everyone was like, fuck chess. Yeah, it's fuck so chess. Boring. Mm-hmm. I could never.
Yeah.
In that same way, I think it's a great vehicle to introduce like this new medium, this new kind of for music sure. to that people like don't normally just associate with like old and stuffy.
Well, yeah, because she makes it clear to you like what there is to love about it.
Yes.
Even in that first scene where she's being interviewed and she talks about Mahler and she talks about his relationship that was going on in his life at the time when he wrote or when he composed the Fifth Symphony. And she's like, that will inform how you hear a lot of the music and how I conduct it. Yeah. And I was like, I've never fucking thought of it that way.
Never
and
in my life.
Then when she's teaching that class at Juilliard and she's talking about Bach and she's talking about how everything sounds like a question. And I was like, dude, I'm getting music education in here that I didn't even, like, I didn't think to listen to this like that. And exactly. that makes it really, really fascinating.
It's a language that, like, I think a lot of artists can really appreciate mm-hmm. because, like, I am not well versed in the language of music in general when it comes to like actual like conducting, composing, scoring.
Right.
I don't really know. Like the most that I could possibly know is what I learned in school when I was in jazz band, mm-hmm. right? Which is like how to read music and what music is.
Right.
Beyond that, there's such a beautiful like array of vocabulary that exists that helps you really get sucked into that world. And it made me kind of think of like when Whiplash came out and they had all of that like musical jargon that made the movie that much more exciting because it almost made it like out of reach.
Right.
Like outside looking in, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it was very cool to like watch a movie and frankly just not fucking get what the fuck they were talking about,
mm-hmm.
but still feel very like in the story,
yeah.
in the world. I think the world building was beautiful in this movie.
Oh my God. Todd Field did such an incredible job of building this world because you come out of the movie going like, is Lydia Tarr a real person? And I did not right. know who she was. And it turns out a lot of people thought that there were articles written about it. She's not a real person. Spoiler alert.
She's a fake
but
person.
They build it so, so uniquely because like, she, for example, there's a clip where you're listening, you hear it, you don't see it. You hear her being interviewed on Alec Baldwin's podcast.
Yeah.
And like Alec Baldwin's a real person and he actually does have a podcast. So like you hear that happening. You like, there are a lot of things that build a real life world around her that also inform her character and tells you exactly who she is as a person and like what her celebrity is like. But yeah, it's just, it's brilliant filmmaking, I think.
It's crazy because when I think of Tar and when I think about the impact that it had on me personally, I see it as like character and world first, story second, which for a movie that's nominated for Best Picture, you're like, what the fuck? Like mm-hmm. you're nominating this movie based on like a character essentially, because at the end of the day, the thing that you pull from this movie is not necessarily the story, though the story is very compelling.
Yeah.
It's the character.
It's Lydia Tarr.
It's Lydia. It's her world. It's her and her world.
Yeah.
It's like literally her world and we're all just living in it. And that is what makes this movie so impactful and so good.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. Like it's a movie that influences itself almost. Like Cate Blanchett's acting is informed by obviously by the person that Lydia Tarr is, mm-hmm. but Lydia Tarr, you come to find out in the movie, is a constructed person. She's not real. Her name is actually like,
hold on, I had this in my notes.
Oh, Linda Tarr.
Yes, Linda.
Linda Tarr, but without the accent.
Without the accent and not the Ia. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she made herself sound more like European. Yes,
she made herself sound more European. She's actually just from like Rhode Island or some shit. And she's very, very humble roots. And she had, I mean, nothing essentially, and then built this life of music and elitism for herself. And now this, she acts like this is who she is to her core. And it is, but she's a constructed person. She's almost like Gatsby a little bit.
Yes. Like,
you know?
No, a 1,000%.
That is who you really are, but you made it. like you constructed it.
Yeah.
But now it does live so deeply in you that there is no differentiation.
It's crazy because it's like her being authentic is her playing this character.
Yes.
If she were to not play this character, and again, I'm talking about Lydia Tár, I'm not talking about Cate Blanchett playing Lydia Tár.
Right.
Lydia Tár is playing Lydia Tár.
Mm-hmm.
And when she's not playing Lydia Tár, she's not being authentic to herself. And we can see that in the movie.
And she's lost.
And that's crazy to think about because as human beings, we all tend to think like, no, the highest form of yourself is your most authentic self.
Right.
But what happens when your most authentic self is a fucking fabricated version of yourself that you like better than the actual you?
Yeah.
So the second that we had stepped out of the movie theater and like talked about it more, mm-hmm. and I got that, I was like, oh shit.
Right.
Yeah. And then she lets it get out of hand.
Yeah, because that is what lends itself to this being technically a psychological drama, is because Lydia is struggling in her field because she has such a firm belief in the classics and the importance of them.
The basics, the fundamentals.
The basics, the fundamentals. But she's also being drawn towards these slightly more alternative and new styles of music because she's writing her own music. She finds herself being attracted to a very like cutting edge cellist. Yep. And so she's grappling with this like old versus new like struggle within herself. And it's literally happening in her field of music, but it's also happening like with her relationship because she's being pulled in the direction of another woman, even though she already has a wife. And then that also is mirroring what's happening within herself. She's feeling more pulled back towards her roots and pulled farther away from this identity that she has spent so much time building. So it's like you have three different layers of the same message happening. And it makes her go insane to the point where like there are things that happen in the movie that you don't know if they're actually happening or if they're like her going through brief psychosis.
It's a mind fuck. I would not recommend being on any kind of mind altering substances.
However, I will say being high for this movie makes you obsessed with the music.
Yeah.
You're just like, I get it.
When I'm just like the metronome. But like, I just wouldn't recommend it. I do. So we talked a lot about the character of Lydia Tár and the world. And I think, again, like I said earlier, it really just illustrates the point that it's more about what makes this movie shine is more the character and the world building than it is the actual story. But again, the story itself is really fucking rich. Compelling. So Lydia Tár essentially finds herself at like the pinnacle of her career. She is about to take on this like master symphony of work by her mentor, her big kahuna, her white whale essentially. Yeah. And people love her. She is currently in like this status of celebrity where she walks into a room and the room goes quiet.
Yeah.
She's being interviewed and people are clinging on to every word that she says. Mm-hmm. She goes to go teach classes and people want to learn from her. However, the breadcrumbs that the movie leaves us with is like, this bitch is problematic.
She's problematic as fuck. But that scene is so fascinating. First of all, it's all done in one take and it's an incredible scene, but it works so well because it is a slightly more political representation of the struggle she's experiencing inside. And while she's being a bitch about it, there's a lot of weight to what she's saying. And it really holds a critical lens up to like how people perceive art, how people value art, especially as time passes and we learn new things about people who made that art in the past. And it makes you go like, has the value of this and the meaning of this changed in light of what I now know about the person who made it? For some people, yes. For some people, no. And it's really interesting. But then you also have a kid there going, yeah, the foundations of classical music don't matter because of misogyny. And then you're kind of like, well, I don't know if that's right either.
Yeah. It's difficult because I personally had a lot of feelings about this scene in particular. And the scene that we're talking about is when she goes to go teach a class at Juilliard. She's like, essentially
Juilliard.
Like a, not a sub, but like,
she's like a guest professor
Guest professor. Yeah. A visiting professor or whatever. And she goes to teach this one class on classical music. And again, we're talking Juilliard. So in your mind, you're like, okay, everyone in this room is the best of the best, cream of the crop. They're all young, but they're still the best of the best, right? And when she's in there, she's trying to explain like box music mm-hmm. and how it moves and like how it, like you're saying, how it leaves questions to be answered and how it, like, it's such a staple and you have to know it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, is everyone like studying him? Is everyone doing it? Blah, blah, blah. And one of the kids is like, no, bitch. Like, this is, he was a misogynist. Mm-hmm. This is not for me. I identify as non-binary. Yeah. And this musician, this composer and the music that he made mm-hmm. is not for me.
Right.
Right. And her argument is like, no, it is for you. You have to interpret it in this specific way in order to understand it. Like, I'm a queer woman. She pulls this card of like, I'm a queer woman. Mm-hmm. I still play his music. I still listen to his music. And it turns into this like incredibly heated, like yeah. power struggle between teacher and student, which student never had a chance, honey.
No.
But it turns into this like very heated power struggle and like just really asks the question of like maker of art and art. And like mm-hmm. what it means to each individual person, like you were saying. And it just gets so fucking messy. And again, like this is our first introduction into her being problematic as fuck.
Yeah.
Because other than that, we get like these glimpses of like her and this old student that she had. Mm-hmm. And what happened to that old student? Is that old yeah. student alive? Is that old student not? And then we find out later that old student had essentially like a mental breakdown yeah. over her treatment by Lydia Tarr.
Yeah. And then Lydia Tarr like blacklisted her in the industry essentially.
Exactly. And wrote emails to like every symphony and like philharmonic orchestra, whatever, mm-hmm. being like, I have to tell you, do not hire this bitch. She's crazy.
Yeah.
Which there's no way for us to know that, A, and B, she was a student of hers / employee of hers.
Yeah.
So that's just a problematic situation to begin with.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, Lydia Tarr is not a good person.
No, so much gray with her. And I personally like the thought exercise that it brings. I like being provoked to like think in the same way as her, but also yeah. think in the opposite. And then also like settle where I fall in the gray. It's really, I don't know. It's if you're... This sounds so pretentious, but like if you're an intellectual, but that's not what I mean. If you like thought exercises like this, like if you like feeling challenged by a film or by anything, I think that this movie is incredible because it just makes you fucking think.
It makes you think. And it also makes you like evaluate like the different roles that people have in their lives because mm-hmm. you look at Lydia Tarr and her relationship with her daughter. So in the movie, we also like follow her daughter being this like young, mm-hmm. tiny little girl.
Petra.
Going to school in Germany, chilling, having bullies essentially.
Oh my God.
And Lydia's like the hero in her life. She plays the hero role in her mm-hmm. daughter's life.
Yeah.
With her wife, because she's married, even though she's out there being a hoe. Mm-hmm. Like she's married. With her wife, she plays the role of wife. She plays the role of provider. She mm-hmm. plays the role of mother. Like there are so many roles that Lydia Tarr plays. But the sad part is the only role that Lydia Tarr is interested in keeping is the role of Lydia Tarr.
Yeah, facts.
And that's when at the end of the movie, you kind of go like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so you out here mm-hmm. really choosing not even yourself because it's not her authentic self.
Yeah.
It's this fabricated reality, this fabricated character that she's made for herself. She's choosing that over everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And the climax of this movie, I don't want to spoil it because I really want Aaron to watch it, but I'm just going to say
right here.
The climax of this movie is fucking wild and it just spins out of control. It's a shit show, but
I
love it.
Hilarious. This movie ends on like a romping note.
Yeah.
I will say
it's quite funny
because it subverts expectations. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
And kind of like levels the playing field.
Yes. And it provides a consequence in the best way. And also like not enough. It didn't go far enough.
Mm-mm.
Because in reality, that's what ends up happening.
Yeah.
You think that these people that are in power mm-hmm. that have fucked up get that consequence and have to live through that consequence. But that's not what happens.
Yeah. No.
What happens is they get a slap in the wrist and then they move on and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
That's what I'm saying, son. So if you know,
what we just said, if you've watched the movie, you watched the ending and what we said resonated,
let us know.
Let us know if you know. You
this,
know.
Tarr is fucking amazing. You won't regret it.
Tarr is incredible. There are also like such beautiful, like music scenes, mm-hmm. like when they're playing the cello. It's so beautiful. She has the most gorgeous apartments.
Oh God, yeah.
Oh my fucking God.
We have to move to Germany now.
We have to move to Germany. She has this like insane mid-century modern like home.
Yeah.
And then she also has like this like very classic like little apartment that she like writes yeah. her music in. There's like books everywhere and it's fucking crazy. She herself has like great style.
Impeccable style.
Impeccable style. She gets all her suits tailored. Like mm-hmm. if anything, the visual.
Oh yeah.
The visuals in this movie give.
Yes, they really give. Do. They do. Ugh. 10 Go watch 10. Tar.
Go watch Tar. Go watch Tar before they expand the universe too big and then we start hating it.
Exactly.
And we'll be right back. Now back to the show.
All right, Monica, do you want to introduce the second film of the episode?
I would love to. Truly pivoting this ship around.
Oh, it takes place on a ship, it does.
We're going to be talking about Triangle of Sadness.
Yes.
It came out in 2022, written and directed by, and I'm going to butcher this, Ruben Östlund.
Östlund.
Ruben Östlund. Celebrity model couple, Carl, played by Harris Dickinson, and Yaya, played by the late Charles B. Dean, are invited on a luxury cruise for the uber-rich, helmed by an unhinged boat captain, played by the one and only Woody Harrelson. What first appeared Instagrammable ends catastrophically, leaving the survivors stranded on a desert island and fighting for survival. Yes, that is literally the plot of this movie.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't seem like it from the title.
No, it doesn't at all. Also, all of the trailers take place on the boat. So I thought the whole movie took place on the boat.
Me also as well.
We was wrong.
I was talking about this movie to Aaron and I was like, the marketing for this movie really leads you to believe a few things. A, that Woody Harrelson is going to be in this whole fucking movie.
And he's not.
And he's literally not. Mm-hmm. B, that this movie like takes place on a ship the entire fucking time. It does not. And C, that like it's more of a like thrillery type movie than it actually is. Some of the marketing was just a little, it leaned very thrillery. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why? For what reason? Because this movie was literally like a comedy the entire time.
Until the ending. And then you're like, oh.
And then I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, exactly.
The ending was very open-ended.
It really is. And I loved it. I loved it.
I was a big fan.
This movie is kind of a sleeper hit. It got really poor like audience reviews, but it did won the, it won. It did win.
It did win.
It won the Palme d'Or, right?
Palme d'Or.
Yeah, Palme d'Or.
D'Or.
At Cannes.
Cannes.
Which means something.
Like,
good.
It's like the highest honor for a film exactly. at this festival.
And to be honest, like, I fucking adored this movie. Like, it opens with this scene at a male modeling casting.
Ugh, already incredible.
Incredible. And you just see all of these shirtless male models. Ugh. And you see this guy fucking walking around talking to them, interviewing them, and they're like videotaping it. And they're talking to them about like what kind of models they are, blah, 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 blah.
What's their story?
Yeah, what's your story? Give us your best face. And then they'll be like, okay, now give us H&M. Now give us Balenciaga. And then they have to like switch back and forth. It's so funny. Then you see them in the modeling casting room and see how bullshit it is, where they're just like, what? Can you do something about your triangle of sadness? Which is the space between your eyebrows that you like furrow.
It's
so fucking insane.
Like, the thing about it is, like, very controversial hot take.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that modeling is, like, kind of a scam most of the time.
For sure.
And I think that, like, a lot of people can be models. Yeah. Not a lot of people can be amazing models, but yeah. I think a lot of people can model.
For
period.
Sure.
Period.
Yeah.
Because all it really is like, showcasing the clothes on your body. Mm-hmm. It really has very little to do with the person inside.
Yeah.
Period.
That's true.
So, at the end of the day, it's, like, I understand the critique on, like, the way that models are judged, mm-hmm. but also, it's such a fabricated and insane system already that I'm, like, you're critiquing nothing, essentially. You're critiquing air. Like, that's how that's how concrete, like, the set rules of, mm-hmm. like, what makes a good model. It's always so arbitrary and, like, yes. vague and enigmatic when you're like, this is what makes a good model. It's like, right. okay, sure, bitch. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So
point me to the rule book where it says this.
So in this first scene, which off right off the bat, the writing in this movie is impeccable. It's
insane.
So funny. It's so, like, lightning fast. It's very unique. Like, this is, I was telling Sebastian this when we first, like, while we were watching it, I was like, this is one of the most unique movies I've seen in a long time.
Definitely.
Because it was very unexpected. And it also, it just has a different vibe. It has a different, like, rhythm to it that you haven't seen a lot lately. It, like, really moves. And it also helps that pretty much the entire cast, with the exception of Woody Harrelson, are people that you, like, might have seen in other stuff, but probably don't recognize, probably or not. Are entirely newcomers. And the actors are incredible. I'm very, very sad that Charlie B. Dean yeah. passed away so suddenly after this movie released. She died, like, 8 months after it was released.
She was 32 years old.
Yeah.
I believe it was a bacterial infection.
Yes.
Caused by her lack of a spleen.
Yes, exactly.
So, very sad.
Super, super sad, because she's, I mean, she's stunning. She looks like a model, but she can also act her ass off. So that was really sad. But I mean, like, what a movie. It's also shot beautifully.
Oh, it's beautifully shot.
Yeah.
I can totally tell why a lot of audiences didn't really love this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's not for everyone. I think the tone is really kooky.
Yeah.
But also sincere. It's very strange. I think you have to be, like, in the mood. You have to be in a specific sure. mood to watch this movie. So, like, I can understand it. And frankly, I don't necessarily forgive it for that. I think that it needed to figure itself out just, like, a little bit sure. more in order to be, like, a widely loved film.
Right.
But I think that what it has to offer is, like, really eclipses that issue that I had with it. Mm-hmm. I also just in general, like, the thought of being on a boat, no. It's a no from me. Like, I wanted to essentially skip ahead, like, from the hotel scene and, like, the scenes with Yaya and Carl, mm-hmm. which, LOL, his name is fucking Carl. with Yaya and Carl, I wanted to just skip right ahead to the island. But no, we had to endure the horrific, horrific
boat ride.
Fucking boat scenes that, like, the camera would not stop moving.
No.
The fucking floor would not stop moving. Woody Harrelson, that motherfucker, was standing on a slant the entire time. It was so funny, but so disorienting. And it's not for the faint of heart. That's all I have to say.
No, it is not.
It makes you physically physically ill.
Okay, here's what I think makes it worth it, personally. I mean, it doesn't make me that ill because I'm not sensitive to vomit, but the way it was shot, how it's always rocking back and forth, fucking brilliant. You feel like you're on the ship with them.
That's what freaked me out.
I think they make it really worth it. Like, it is such a big payoff because they have spent the whole time up until this point, setting the tone of the demonstrations of excess and wealth that are happening in this movie. Like, even pre getting on the boat, the whole argument between fucking Carl and Yaya in the restaurant about paying the bill,
my God,
is so fucking brilliant. I was obsessed with that scene.
It's crazy because, like, I was even more obsessed with the scene when they were in the hotel room and they were talking to each other and being just blunt, being like, are you taking advantage of me?
Yes.
Yes. Did you just want me to pay the bill, like, the check?
Yeah.
Yes. It's like, that to me was such a beautiful display of, like, bluntness
uh-huh.
and, like, yes, I'm manipulating you. It is what it is. Yeah. Like, a shared understanding of honesty.
But we're both getting something out of this
exactly,
relationship.
Exactly. This, like, tit for tat type situation.
Well, yeah. There's an acceptance of transactional relationships in this kind of world.
Yes.
That, like, you don't really see a lot in other, like, demographics.
I think, like, in influencer culture specifically, yeah. I think it exists and, like, we just don't know about it. And
oh,
I think
sure.
this movie essentially is shining a light on those transactional relationships. So I'm yes. like, you're literally just together for the clout. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But like, it's almost endearing in a way that they're so honest with each other that it seems genuine where you're like, I know that this is a transactional relationship, but the fact that you guys are being so fucking honest makes me feel like it's a genuine relationship.
For sure.
Like it could go the distance.
I mean, I think that they like loved something about each other for sure. Like there is something there. I don't think it was all transactional, but they absolutely acknowledge what they're getting from each other by being together.
100%.
I think one of the things that I thought was funniest about this movie, which is why I kind of don't care that this movie isn't for everybody, is because I think the fucking filmmaker knew that the people who wanted to watch this movie, who would actually go to the movie theater to watch this movie, were the exact people he was making fun of in the movie.
Yes.
It's also all the fucking people at Cannes. It's all the fucking people in Hollywood. Like,
yes.
These are the assholes that this movie's making fun of. And I think the filmmaker, he knew that that's who was going to watch the movie. And he's like, ha ha, isn't it hilarious that we have all like subscribed to this insane life that we're living?
It's crazy.
And we just don't give a shit that we're insane for it. Isn't that crazy?
It's insane because like the character that I resonated the most with ended up not surviving and going to the desert island. I really ended up resonating with Thomas, the captain, Woody Harrelson's character. He was like a flaming drunk and essentially like a socialist, a Marxist. Excuse me. He makes the distinction.
Well, him and the oligarch argue about it over the loudspeaker. It's
and it's so,
so
funny.
Funny
because it's like them. They're just bantering. They're just like talking about this political debate. They're like, ha ha ha. Let's drink and let's like spit quotes at each other about our various political ideologies.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking funny because in the end, nothing matters.
Nothing.
Like in the end, capitalism where? Communism where? Like, it's not there. In the end, Woody Harrelson is dead in the ocean somewhere.
Yeah.
And the oligarch ends up, like, essentially fending for himself. And at the end of the day, ends up fucking getting octopus handed to him by a fucking toilet scrubber.
Yeah.
Like, someone who, like, fucking was on the maintenance side of the crew. And she ended up being the biggest badass of them all. Just
she was
for
a little
this
scary.
Bitch. I love her. What was her name?
I forget her name, but I do quickly want to give a shout out to Alicia the pool girl, who you and I both love.
Yes.
This is the first acting thing she has ever done in her entire life. And she has one scene in the movie where she's being asked by this insane, like rich woman in the pool. This woman in the pool is like, I want all of the crew to go swimming.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? And it just goes on for probably like 5 or 6 minutes. The scene, she's just holding like this insane smile. She's like, no.
No. No.
No. No.
And the woman's like, what? And she's like,
yeah, no. And I put in all caps in my notes, I said, if Anne Hathaway can get an Oscar for fucking Les Mis, then Alicia the pool girl should get an Oscar for best supporting actress.
100%. Abigail, the Dolly De Leon plays Abigail.
Yes, Abigail.
Who is, and it's not toilet scrubber, it's toilet maintenance person or like...
She's like a lower crew member.
Whatever. It doesn't even matter because she's a bad bitch.
Yes.
She literally ends up on the desert island in a fucking lifeboat because she's that bitch.
Yes.
With supplies because she's the baddest of them all.
Right.
And then hunts a fucking octopus on her first day there.
They all wash up on this island to give you some backstory here. They all wash up on this island and fucking what's her name? Paula, the leader of the crew.
Oh, fuck Paula.
The blonde. She thinks that because she on a boat was the leader of the crew that she can still tell all the staff what to do while they're washed up on an island, which is simply not true. And Abigail, she's a person of color and she is like the lowest on the totem pole there. She is the only one who actually knows how to fucking survive on an island. And so she ends up being like, no, fuck all of you guys. You can bow down to me and you can help me do shit. And then I'll give you food and shelter. And so she just like totally games the system.
She pulls I am the captain now.
She truly does. And she seduces Carl.
The hottest one there.
And Carl leaves Yaya to go fuck Abigail
in a lifeboat. Because she is that bitch.
Yes, it's crazy.
Honestly, she is the main character.
She really is. But then it's still kind of like funny up until this point. Like, it's a little dark, but it's still pretty funny.
It's a dark comedy.
Yeah. But then you get to the ending and you're like, this is so fucked up. And then they leave you with this vague ass ending and you're just like, oh my God.
It's crazy.
This is where the real darkness comes in.
So the entire movie is really just like a commentary on like class. Yeah. And like, it's very Eat the Rich, right?
Yes.
But which we've seen a thousand fucking times.
Right.
It's like, whatever. But what makes this movie so special is it does it in a way that's so sinister. Mm-hmm. It just creeps right underneath the surface. You don't even really fucking realize it. There are things that are on the nose, which is like all of the, you know, there are shots with like on the boat, the crew that are the servers, right? That interact with all of the guests on the ship, right?
Yeah.
And they're like huddled and having like a team thing. And they're wearing these beautiful, crisp white uniforms and they're like, yeah, we're gonna make money. And then the shot right after that is like below that level is all of like the maintenance staff and those crew mm-hmm. members, and they're like dressed in black and they're like on their phones on their break time.
Yeah.
And it's like there are things that are on the nose in that way, but I think those are the only things that really hit you over the head, because everything else is so subtle and so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it is, like, you're absolutely right. This movie was made for the people that would seek this movie out.
Yeah, like there's a great shot when they first get on the boat of they have this like chopper coming in, delivering this case. And you're like, oh my God, what's in the case? It's a case full of fucking Nutella.
Nutella.
Because some guest was like, I need Nutella.
I want Nutella.
And so they choppered it in. It's insane.
The wealth. I mean, it's ridiculous. There's a couple that does not end up surviving.
No.
They are a British couple and they built their wealth around death and destruction, essentially.
Yeah, by manufacturing weapons.
Manufacturing weapons like hand grenades and things like that. And I mean, the funny thing is like their demise is ultimately pirates take over the ship and a grenade lands there.
This film has everything.
What's so fucking funny is that she grabs the grenade and is like, my dear, is this one of ours?
And then she blows up.
And she just blows up. And do you want to know why? Because Eat the Rich, honey.
Yeah, because she doesn't know how to fucking use the shit that she manufactures.
Facts.
Oh my God. It's so good. It's so, so good. And then there's this, I don't want to spoil the ending for you because it like is really incredible.
It's truly, truly phenomenal.
It's just like, it's so, you just want to shake them. But then you also get this really dark, like you get a hint of something that might have happened.
You know what?
That probably happened.
It felt very Parasite.
The ending. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I was like, what is the movie that gives me the vibes? Yes.
Except without an answer.
Without an answer, right? I do think the one thing I will say about the ending, and it may or may not spoil whatever it is, what it is, but like in the end, when Carl is running towards them, mm-hmm. you don't know who he's running for.
No.
Is it Yaya?
Or is it Abigail?
Or is it Abigail? Because at the end of the day, he found a genuine relationship in Abigail.
Yeah.
Again, unexpected.
Oh, very unexpected.
Because he's literally with a model.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't know who he's running to.
No, you have no idea.
And at the end of the day, class does not matter. At the end of the day, it's like, who was there for you to keep you warm in the lifeboat?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Also, it turned out that they were on an island with a resort nearby the entire time.
Which is like so fucking funny because they're so consumed in their own shit that yeah. they did not even think to consider, let's explore the island.
Yeah, let's explore the island and see what's here. Like that Yaya and Abigail happen upon like a crazy fancy resort.
And the thing is like at the end of the day, you don't know
no.
if Abigail had known the entire fucking time.
Right.
And that's what's so brilliant about this movie. It's like, you don't know if she already explored the island and already found the elevator mm-hmm. and the luxury resort. You don't know. You know that she's keeping them on the island because she's the captain.
Yeah. And she wants that sweet Carl ass.
The second that world is over, the second that her time on the island is over, she goes back to being a maintenance person,
yeah.
someone's assistant, like whatever. And she doesn't want that life for herself because she knows she's worth more.
Right.
She knows she can offer more. She's just stuck in this like fucking like scaffolding of a system that she has.
Right.
That's just like encasing her in.
That's facts.
But on the island, bitch, anything can happen.
She's the captain.
She's the captain. It's a crazy film.
Movie. It's such a good movie.
It's so good. It's a long, I will say it's a long movie. I think it's 2 hours, 20 minutes. Just about. Yeah,
probably.
It doesn't feel long.
Tar is the same length.
Yeah, it doesn't feel long, but it's definitely not like a tight 90 or anything.
No, I think it's well-paced though, because have three very distinct sections, like pre-boat, on the boat, post-boat.
Yeah, on the island. Yeah. Right. But yeah, I don't know. I want more of this story, mm-hmm. but I don't know where it would come
from. No, like, I don't know where to find it. This is very much a story that exists in a little vacuum, and I'm okay with that.
It gave me like if The White Lotus and Parasite had like a baby.
Had a baby. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
This did give very White Lotus vibes.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
I was watching and I was like, who's Tanya?
Who's Tanya?
Which one is Tanya?
Oh my God. We forgot to read the best boys for Tar.
Oh, here. We'll do them both in one go.
Here, I've got the best boys for both up.
Go for it.
Okay. Best boy, Tar. Sasha Gorlick. Yes. And best boy grip, B-cam Dolly Grip, is Felix Lohmann.
Yes.
Applause, applause, applause. Now the best boy grip Sweden for Triangle of Sadness is Emil Kullberg.
Wow.
Oh, best boy Greece is Dimitris Stampolis. The other best boy Sweden is Gidrius Bukaitis.
Yeah, we're never.
I don't know.
Get that.
I'm so sorry, Gidrius.
Gidrius.
I'd like to apologize.
You know what? She's apologizing
to you specifically.
She's apologizing right now, and she vows to name her firstborn son
Gidrius.
Gidrius,
get me my fur. Anyway,
and on that note, and on that note,
Monica, you're the beast.
You're the beast, Jessica.
Have a lovely evening.
Have a lovely evening.
We're gonna be hanging out, so we're gonna have a lovely evening together.
Don't forget to watch all of the Academy Award films. Do everyone it. Out there, next one's a doozy. Enjoy your mm-hmm. evening, your mid afternoon, or your morning. I don't bye, know when bye. You're listening. Bye.